From between the hedges at Sanford Stadium to the practice fields, from Stegman Coliseum and wherever else the Bulldogs are playing, it's time to talk Georgia sports.
Touchdown, Dogs win it!
From the Athens Banner Herald, here are your hosts, Mark Weiser and Ryan Dennis.
Welcome in. It's the Bulldogs Extra Podcast. We are back, and it is game week for the Peach Bowl. Georgia and Ohio State for a spot in the national championship game. There are players going in and coming to Georgia out of the transfer portal. Even a Georgia basketball player has reportedly gone in. We will talk Buckeyes and Bulldogs with Joey Kaufman of the Columbus Dispatch. Ryan, how's it going?
Oh, man, it's going. Got through the holidays, I think, in one piece. So, yeah, ready for a little Georgia football, Ohio State. And, you know, it's a whirlwind this next coming week, man, with everything got going on with players coming in, coach, you know, interviews and press conferences and everything before we finally get to a New Year's Eve game with the Georgia Bulldogs in Atlanta. So it's very exciting. How's things with you? How were, I guess, a little bit of time off and all that for you?
We're not talking about the furlough right now, but I will say we're recording this on Monday night. We really planned to record this on Monday morning, but you know what? Our guest got his flight. We'll ask him when he comes on, but got some travel issues and he had to drive all day. So we'll talk to him. He's already in Atlanta. I'm going to be there tomorrow morning. I don't know when we're posting this. We're posting this Monday, Tuesday morning, or we're posting it tonight?
Yeah, I think Tuesday morning.
All right. Ryan, it's, I think it's below freezing again here in Athens as I speak. I did drip my faucets. As far as I know, no pipes have burst. Power did flicker and never went off a couple of days ago. So success. Hope you had a Merry Christmas. Listeners, hope you enjoyed the holiday season. And hope you didn't lose power and stayed warm. It's been crazy cold. Not Indianapolis. I saw Ryan, you tweeted, I guess it was Friday or Saturday, about how cold it was in Indianapolis. It's pretty damn close to that cold a couple of days ago here.
I mean, I tell you, I don't think I'd ever experienced cold like we experienced in Indy when it was 7 degrees, I think. But we hit it the other day, which was kind of ironic. I was up in North Carolina, actually, for the holidays. My sister lives up that way, so we went up there. And it was actually warmer around Greensboro, North Carolina, than it was back down in Athens, which was kind of odd. But, yeah, it was frigid. I mean, that was it did take me back to our time in Indy last year. But the power actually went out for a little while up North Carolina way. But glad y'all didn't, like, have a – foot of snow or more like some places. I saw in Buffalo, which I know that Buffalo, New York is used to that type of weather, but I saw the players had to, you know, get out of the parking lot on their return from wherever they were playing. And it looked like they had about 3 feet of snow piled up on the back of their cars. I've never experienced that and never want to.
Yeah. I think they're not allowing people to drive in that part of New York State. I haven't even mentioned yet, but signing day was last week. Georgia, number two in the nation on the 247 Sports Composite, 2 5-star recruits, 21 4-stars, and they have 27 commitments. 25 have signed. A couple guys that I guess are going to wait till the late signing period, see if they end up in the class. But where to start? How about the transfers? You know, since we're 5 days away from the game, or 4 days, if this pops up on Tuesday. You know, we had a chance to talk to Kirby Smart today and a couple of Georgia players who it was supposed to be an arrival press conference, but they were still in Athens because they practiced this afternoon and got a police escort for their buses into Atlanta to the team hotel. I saw Holly Rowe on ESPN interviewing Kirby, who was dressed up in his suit, wasn't dressed up in a suit for the interview where he did with the media. He was in his visor and I guess coming off the practice field, whatever he wore there. But couple of proven receivers on the SEC level in Dominic Lovett from Missouri, Ra-Ra Thomas from Mississippi State. You know, Kirby said these are guys that are kind of proven on the SEC level. Georgia's top receiver this year, Ladd McConkey. Marcus Rosemy Jack Saint, you know, is another returning receiver for next year, presumably average 11.2 yards per catch. We know A.D. Mitchell hasn't played much this year. He supposedly is going to come back now. I wrote about the receivers today, and I mentioned, you know, we thought X, Y, or Z would come back last year, and they had a guy go to Alabama, right? So we don't know for sure. But what do you think? What do you make of Dominique Lovett and Ra-Ra Thomas?
I mean, that's two guys that lead their teams in passing or receiving yardage, you know, and yeah, two big gets. I mean, in this crazy world of transfer portals and everything else, and I mean, you basically added two guys that are proven talent to your recruiting class is what it amounted to. And you know, the funny thing is, who's going to be throwing them? We know it's not going to be Stetson Bennett throwing them the ball next year, but obviously it's two guys with past success that believe they're going to come to a program that they're going to fit into. And you know, when you've won a national championship, you might be playing for another one this year. I mean, people want to come play for that program, and you know, it's really a testament to just Kirby staying on the path of always making the team better. And that's two guys I think that Georgia could use next year, and that might be one of the most dangerous receiving cores in the country. I mean, because you return just about everybody except Kiaris Jackson, I believe, and so you throw those two guys in the mix along with Brock Bowers and maybe Darnell Washington. We'll see, but definitely a strong tight end core. It's gonna be a tough team to handle. It's gonna be tough. They're just keep getting better and better, it seems.
I'd be surprised if Darnell Washington's wearing the red and black next year.
I would too.
I think he's going to the NFL. I think he's a first round projected prospect.
I mean, who's not salivating over that guy if you're in the NFL? I mean, good gosh, he came out of high school looking like he could jump right into the NFL.
Yeah, I wrote today that expecting Dom Blaylock to likely go to the NFL as well. Now he's, you know, I don't know if he's going to be drafted or a priority free agent or whatever, but my understanding is that he's ready to go. Was healthy this season, you know, played every game this year. And when you've had two ACL injuries, you know, and you are healthy, you can't. There's no promise that you're going to be healthy a year from now. So, you know, we'll see if he's when and if he makes that decision official. But that's the way that I understand he was looking to maybe you know, leading in that direction. You know, you mentioned Darnell Washington, another tight end no longer with the Bulldogs. Eric Gilbert in the transfer portal, didn't see him much this year. Three games played, had a one touchdown catch. You know, was pretty much fourth on the depth chart even when he was dressed and ready to go. You know, so what do you make of Eric Gilbert? And it seems like a lot of hype, and then obviously dealt with some, you know, pretty significant personal issues that kept him from being able to live up to that kind of potential.
Yeah, you feel for the guy. I mean, obviously we don't know what's going on in you know, outside of the football program with him, and really we don't know what's going on inside of the football program, but obviously there's some issues that he's dealing with. And last spring, of course, you know, he had such a great spring, and it might have built up these grandiose expectations of what he could do this year in the offense. And you know, obviously that wasn't meant to be, and had more issues. So I just hope well for the guy. You know, you sit there and you watch, and you know, you hope he can make it in a program, and with his talent, I think he can go on to the next level if everything gets worked out. But obviously, as far as Georgia's program goes, I mean, it was nice to have him on the team, but to lose him is not a, you know, not a huge issue because of how much talent they have. But it, you know, it's more than that. It just comes down to the individual, and you hope he can go anywhere and be successful again.
Yeah, I mean, Oscar Delp was a guy, you know, that was ahead of him on the depth chart, obviously behind Bowers and Washington, and they've signed a couple other well-regarded tight ends in this class. You know, as I scroll down through their list of signees, Pierce Sperlin from South Walton
and in Lawson. Florida.
What's that?
I was gonna say, in Lawson, Lucky, a legacy, right?
Yeah, he's got a name very familiar. Both these guys are four stars, between, you know, 100 to 150 rated in that category. So, you know, the tight end has been a very important position for Georgia, and I think they're targeting another tight end that's even higher ranked
Yeah, out of Arizona.
The west, from the west coast. So
they've had success with some west coast tight ends, you know. I mean, so I can see how Todd Hartley going out to anywhere on the west coast, you know, it's not out of a comfort zone for Georgia tight ends. I know that.
Bill Norton went to the transfer portal. He's the other guy, defensive lineman, you know, didn't play much at Georgia, landed at Arizona. So, you know, that's a pretty good deal for him going from one Power Five school to another, obviously, you know, down significantly on the national radar, but maybe he's got a chance to get some playing time there. All right, Ryan, let's talk about this recruiting class. But before we do, I was looking for some Georgia photos. I was curious on the Peach Bowl media site, since you know, they left you know, late this afternoon, but I didn't see anything posted yet. But I did run across the new mascot for the Peach Bowl. Did you see my tweet on that?
I didn't see that. I hope it doesn't look anything like Izzy from the 1996 Olympics.
I don't know what that person looked like. This is Huddles. He was at Ohio State's team dinner last night. And a couple of people already had tweeted at me that this guy kind of was looking like he was bought off of eBay or something, meaning that he looks like other mascots that are already out there. In fact, Will Cheney from the Augusta paper tweeted that he sees, I guess, a striking resemblance between the mascot for the Red Sox by the name of Wally.
Yeah, I do see that.
Man. Not familiar with Wally.
Yeah, I just looked up your tweet to see this. Oh, you know Wally. He looks a lot like that thing.
Man, I know Wally Backman that used to play for the Mets.
No, no. That's not interesting.
Wasn't there Wally World from the Angels? What was his name?
There was a Wally Joyner back in the day. Is that who that was?
Yeah, Wally Joyner. Wally World, yeah.
Hey, so this guy, or this thing, or this whatever you'd call it, I mean, it kind of has a, you know, Philly fanatic look and mixed with the Wally guy. But, you know, when Blooper was first introduced as a Braves mascot, I thought that was a weird-looking thing. But he's grown on me. And the fact that he dominates Twitter pretty good is funny. But we'll see. You want to get your picture with this guy this week?
We'll see. We'll see what see what the setting is.
Huddles. You think they could have come up with something different, you know, Pete's-themed or I don't know.
So that Falcons mascot – not Falcons mascot, the Braves mascot. Isn't he like destroying kids on the football field? Isn't that him?
Yeah. He's got other mascots doing the same thing, I notice. It's humorous.
All right. Let's get back to some real football players, not mascots dressed up to try to, you know, destroy kids. What jumps out at me about this class, as usual for Georgia, is that they load up on defensive players. Like, if we go through the list of the top-rated Georgia players, how many of them are on the defensive side? We start with the five stars: Damon Wallace, edge defender; AJ Harris, cornerback. Then you go down: Samuel Mpemba, edge; Jonel, and I might be butchering his first name, Aguero, safety out of Massachusetts.
Yep.
They've had some success with guys from there. Louis Cine.
Yeah, same position, right? Out of the same area. Absolutely.
Braylon Wilson, linebacker. Okay, you got to go down. You're going 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You get to the sixth rated player. There's an offensive lineman. So the first offensive player is Monroe Freeling out of Mount Pleasant, South Carolina.
Yeah, big boy.
And then you keep going. You got Troy Bowles, the son of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers coach, at linebacker. Jordan Hall, defensive lineman. C.J. Allen, linebacker. Then you get to another offensive player, you know, way down. Tyler Williams, 85 ranked nationally. You know, maybe another guy that can make a run at some playing time next year. But, you know, Todd Monken's shown some stuff with this offense. He's very creative. He gets the ball to playmakers in space and finds a way to get the ball in their hands. But, you know, even if you look below Tyler Williams, the next guy is another defensive guy. What do you make of, you know, will Georgia be able to recruit offensive players at, you know, as high a level? You know, I don't know what it looks like for the 2024 class, I guess. But what do you make of that?
Well, sure. I mean, I think definitely. But, you know, it always goes back to Kirby and his, you know, philosophy of the defense being hard-nosed, tough guys. And I think that's where they start sometimes. But, I mean, I know Tyler Williams is a athletic, explosive guy. You look at Rosemary Jack Saint. That was a receiver they brought in recently who, you know, was top-ranked guy. And every year it seemed like for a, what, three-year stretch, they were bringing in a five-star quarterback. And we'll see who sticks around, you know, over time. But I don't think there's anything to be concerned about when it comes to Georgia's offense, and especially when the whole, you know, successful run the past 2 years has been led by a walk-on quarterback. I mean, sometimes, you know, look at McConkey. I mean, he's a guy who was three-star.
Right.
Nobody thought he'd be anything more than a
right.
than a punt return at best, and here he is, one of Georgia's best receivers. So they seem to find and develop some guys that don't have to have five stars by their names and just find success all over the place.
There's one running back in the class that's Roderick Robinson out of San Diego, and I think he was the – I saw Max Preps, I guess, gave him maybe California Player of the Year. He's rated 204th nationally, but, you know, they've had success with running backs from the other side of the country. Kendall Milton in particular is really coming on recently. So, and they also have a kicker, Peyton Woodring from Lafayette, Louisiana. Now, I noticed over the weekend that Georgia's kicker, Jack Podlesny, accepted an invitation to the
Hula Bowl or something like that, right?
Hula Bowl, which is actually going to be in Orlando, not in Hawaii. But
well, that's false advertising.
He was noncommittal about playing, you know, whether he might come back next year. And so that's kind of answers the question because he's now there was somebody a couple of years ago that accepted an invitation to one of these games. And that I don't think that precludes him from still coming back, but probably a strong indication that he's gone. All right, Ryan, let's go ahead now and bring on our guest to talk Ohio State and Georgia.
Thanks for listening to the Bulldogs Extra Podcast. Like what you hear? Subscribe today wherever you get your podcast. Give us a rating, a like, and even leave us a comment to let us know how we're doing. As always, find more content at onlineathens.com and in the Athens Banner Herald. Now, let's get back to the show.
All right, joining us now from Atlanta is Joey Kaufman, covers Ohio State for the Columbus Dispatch, our sister paper, I guess, in the Gannett chain, and we'll be covering the Buckeyes, Georgia, or as we say around here, I guess, Georgia and Ohio State. Joey, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right, the Buckeyes got to town Christmas Day. You were supposed to, but as we're seeing a lot of people around the country, traveling these days with this weather is not so easy. So what did you learn about the country between Columbus, Ohio, and Atlanta, Georgia today?
There's a place called Bucky's, which is
don't get us started on that. I have my opinions on Bucky's.
It's a large place. It has gasoline and food and other things that you can buy. There's just a mass of people there and cars. But that was our cultural stop among the drive through, I think, several states, Ohio, Kentucky, Tennessee, and then into Georgia. Ended up being a longer travel day, I think, than we anticipated when we thought we would take an easy Christmas day night flight.
Snowed in?
Not snow. Columbus didn't really get a ton of snow. It had some bad weather and ice, but we had a staffing issue on our flight. We couldn't get a co-pilot, which you do need, I guess, two pilots to fly the plane. Mm. One goes down.
Yeah. That's unfortunate. I mean, I'm just saying Ryan Day could have cleared some space up for you guys and flown in with the Buckeyes, I would suspect. But
and a charter flight would have been helpful. I think majority of the Ohio State beat has been stranded and had ultimately had to drive, which honestly, it was an 8.5 hour drive. It could have been worse. At least Ohio State wasn't in the Fiesta Bowl. I don't know how you would have managed to drive to Phoenix.
Yeah, so I guess I know how the beat writers will be tired tomorrow morning, but you know, what is the state of mind for these Buckeyes? I guess we're 5 days before the game. What's your sense of you know where the program is as they're one of the last four standing?
Well, they've had a longer layoff than a lot of the other playoff teams because they didn't play on conference championship weekend. So by the time they get to kickoff on Saturday night in Atlanta here, they'll go 35 days without having played a game. Most of the schools will have gone 28 days by virtue of playing conference championship weekend. So I think that's kind of interesting, just the fact that they've had probably more time to digest their last loss to Michigan and do some game install and game plan for Georgia, because I think basically what they were gaming out on conference championship weekend when they were having practices, they were basically preparing for the scenario of them backdooring into the playoff and matching up with Georgia, and that's the matchup they got. So they were preparing for this. They've had a lot of days to prepare for this, but they're not going to be as maybe fresh and from the standpoint, or not fresh, but tested as of late, just because of the extra week.
So Ron's going to ask the next question, or not the next one, but we'll usually go back and forth. But I want to ask before let Ryan jump in. Was that a bad day against Michigan, or do you think it exposed some flaws that hadn't cost Ohio State a game this season?
Some of both. I mean, I think when you look at Ohio State this year, they were certainly vulnerable to big plays in the secondary. That was an issue that they had did come up throughout the years, especially on defense. For whatever reason, they had been giving up big plays all year, and they were especially, I think, susceptible to a quarterback who could escape the sort of the first rush, extend a play, get outside the pocket. J.J. McCarthy did that against Michigan. And Ohio State had that issue with some mobile quarterbacks. You even saw that in the non-conference schedule when they played Toledo, and Toledo had a quarterback in Daquan Finn who once Ohio State maybe collapsed the pocket and it looked like they were going to bring him down, he, for whatever reason, was able to evade the rush and keep a play alive and throw something up down the field. So that against Michigan, I think, was not too surprising. I think when you look at Ohio State's offense, though, the fact that they only scored 3 points in the second half against Michigan, that felt like a bad day. But their defense, to me, I think you go back to September, the first play of the year, Jim Knowles called a blitz, and it led to a big Notre Dame gain. That was the first play of the year. So that's been, a common theme throughout the year. Ohio State's going to try to bring pressure, try to get after quarterbacks, but they are susceptible if things don't go right at first, things breaking down and giving up some big plays.
So is that the main concern with a guy like Stetson Bennett, who can get outside the pocket and make some plays with his legs?
I think so. I think it's going to be one of the more interesting storylines, because his mobility and being able to wiggle out of stuff, I think, will be a challenge for Ohio State's pass rush. When they lay that first hit on him, can they bring him to the turf, or will he find a way to move out of that and keep a play alive? I think that's going to have a lot of bearing on the result Saturday night.
Obviously, a lot of people in the Southeast, especially Tennessee, couldn't understand how a Stetson Bennett could have been in New York for the Heisman a couple weeks ago. What was the thoughts on that? Obviously, C.J. Stroud was there, but was there any opinion on that up your way about, how did this guy make it, he doesn't have the numbers to be in New York for the Heisman?
I don't think it came up a ton in the Midwest, and I think maybe the unusual part was I think most, for a lot of Ohio State people, I think the week after losing to Michigan, that was the predominant conversation. I don't think a lot of people felt too strongly about Stetson Bennett's Heisman candidacy one way or the other, mostly because CJ finished ahead of Stetson in the race. Maybe if Stetson had come in third ahead of Stroud, then maybe you get more people who are rolling their eyes. But I think just because of the way the place in the ultimate Heisman race maybe left things pretty subdued.
Joey, Jackson Smith, Nigba, and Tavion Henderson, top receiver and running back entering the season, are out. What does that mean for the Buckeyes? I know they haven't Jackson in particular hasn't really played too much this year. What's your thoughts on those guys? I guess, were you expecting either of them to be available?
It felt like bad news for Jackson Smith and Jacob for several weeks. In early November, there still seemed to be some optimism around his availability, and he's basically been a non-factor for most of the year. He got hurt in the first quarter against Notre Dame, has tried to return twice for two games against Toledo and Iowa, and came out early in both of those games. So he's never really been an involved part of the offense, but in early November, it felt like he had a chance to maybe play against Michigan or play in a college football playoff, sort of a similar situation to Jalen Waddle, Alabama, a few years ago, where he comes back for the playoff, maybe even in a more limited capacity, but is available nonetheless. But it was just not a lot of optimism expressed later in November. So I guess it's not too surprising that ultimately he pulled out. He never got fully healthy. To me, Trevion Henderson was more of a not to say surprised, but I think it felt like in late November he was still in play for the playoff. He'd been dealing with a broken bone and ligament in his foot since September. When he's healthy, though, he gives Ohio State's offense, I think, another dimension. He's their more explosive running back between him and Mayan Williams. So when he is at full strength, I think he's the back that they would rely on to throw a swing pass to or hand off, and he could take off for a big run. So he's the explosive element to their running game. So not having him and Jack spin the jig, but I think for the whole season, they were sort of the – at least the preseason, those two and C.J. Stroud were sort of the big three for Ohio State's offense. And they've really only had one and a half of those guys. I think this year Trayvon's been limited, and then they really haven't had Jackson at all along with C.J.
Hey, quick follow-up on that. Who's Ohio State's best running back now? I know they, against Michigan, they played a guy that really hadn't gotten too much work this year. You know, are you pretty confident, you know, like who's going to get the workload in this game?
I don't feel confident because it's been such a odd collection of maybe the way they've handled the running back rotation the last month of the season. I mean, Dallin Hayden was a breakout freshman against Maryland, had 26 carries to help him beat Maryland. Then the following week against Michigan, he has two carries in favor of Chip Trainum, who was a linebacker for the first 6 weeks. And it felt like maybe they were trying to have an ace up their sleeve for Michigan and really throw off their plan. So that was unusual. I do think the important thing to keep in mind, though, and I think if I had my best guess to be Mayan Williams will be the starting running back. He's closer to full strength. He rolled an ankle against Indiana mid-November, played against Michigan, wasn't at full strength, which was probably why Chip Trainum also got as many carries as he did. I think if Mayan Williams is close to 100%, he's their best available back. And even when Trayvon was healthy, Mayan was going to split carries with Trayvon. He's a smaller guy, 5'9", low center of gravity, tough to really bring down because of his size. And he can be shifty, but he's also pretty physical. So I think he would be the guy they would rely on the most.
Obviously, there was frustration after the loss to Michigan, but is Ryan Day in any trouble if this isn't a close game or if they lose it, you think?
Not among, I think, the powers that be, the people, his boss, Gene Smith, and he signed a big contract extension a year ago. But I think in terms of the angst that Ohio State's fan base is feeling would only intensify if they lost. And I think some of the pressure on Ryan Day within Columbus and among the fan base would grow because he's got a great record. He's 45-5. But he's gone to the college football playoff 3 out of the 4 years. He's been Ohio State's head coach. He's kept them, I think, largely humming since taking over for Urban Meyer. But they're now 1-2 against Michigan. This is the first time they've lost consecutive games to that program since the end of the John Cooper era in 99-2000. His predecessors, Jim Tressel and Urban Meyer, had so much success in the rivalry. So for a lot of people, that's a big strike against them. And then if they were to lose to Georgia, I think it'd be another situation where they get to the college football playoff and maybe don't pull off a big-time win. So I think those two things would lead to a lot of restlessness among Ohio State fans. I think they want to feel like there's momentum going forward other than just qualifying for the postseason.
Getting back to the defense for a second, the big plays given up by Ohio State against Michigan, do you expect there'll be a less aggressive scheme this time, or is that kind of who they are?
I think it's kind of who Jim Knowles is. He's a guy who is not really afraid to bring pressure and go after quarterbacks. I don't necessarily think they were overly aggressive against Michigan per se. Like if you go to look, if you look up their Pro Football Focus blitz numbers for that game, they were pretty low. I think the unusual part was maybe the scenarios in which they called to bring pressure. Like the first play I think that comes to mind was Michigan's first touchdown, the 69-yard touchdown that J.J. McCarthy throws to Cornelius Johnson, who catches the ball and turns upfield after a missed tackle. Ohio State basically called an all-out blitz on a third and long when Michigan hadn't done all that much offensively. But I don't really expect they'll change their approach too much. They put a lot of pressure on the cornerbacks throughout the year where they're going to send pressure from different spots and that can sometimes – put their corners in a tough position, and they've had a hard year, but they want those guys to be able to make those those plays. And I think Jim Knowles has brought a certain aggressive style to Ohio State's defense. They've improved, I think, quite a bit year over year compared to where they were a year ago, where Kerry Combs began the year as the defensive coordinator and play caller, and secondary coach Matt Barnes got promoted to calling plays for the defense. So they're better than they were a year ago. But I think sometimes the aggressiveness, at least in the Michigan game, came back to bite them a little bit.
This being Georgia's third game, I think, at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium this year, how much of a disadvantage does that put Ohio State at, if any, or do you think that's a big advantage for Georgia to have their third game at the same place?
I expect it'll be a big advantage from I think largely the potential of the way the crowd's going to be split up, and each school got a ticket allotment of 13,000, but it's 50 something or so tickets that were sold to, I guess, by the Peach Bowl to locals in Atlanta. I think if those are all snatched up by Georgia fans, it could be a pretty heavy crowd tilt in favor of the Bulldogs and end up being a de facto home game. If a lot of Ohio State fans end up making this trip and packing the place, where you have the Ohio State alumni in the Southeast here come, I think that'll certainly help. But I think that'll be the real advantage that Georgia would have is potentially with the crowd, and whether it's for Ohio State, kind of like when they faced LSU in that BCS title game in 07 down in the Sugar Bowl, where it was a pretty heavily Tiger crowd.
Joey, Ohio State's had some good quarterbacks, obviously, in the last, just go back to the last decade. I guess you could include Joe Burrow in there, who showed that at LSU. But C.J. Stroud, how good is he, and what has to happen for that offense to click big in this game with Marvin Harrison Jr. and the other wideouts that they have?
I think when C.J. Stroud's at his best, he can make a lot of high-level throws. He can put the ball in some tight windows, especially along the sideline with Marvin Harrison Jr. I think those guys have a real connection and ability to make some really high degree difficulty throws. And I think that's the separating thing that C.J. Stroud can do is thread some needles down the field. And he's a pretty smart quarterback. I think part of, I think, to appreciate his style of play is he's able to, I think, manipulate some stuff in coverage. And he has a pretty, I think, good grasp of their system overall, him being his second year behind center for Ohio State, where things can go south for them. And I think where he, I think for a lot of Ohio State fans, and maybe the limitation of him as a quarterback is when plays break down, he's not always good outside of structure, and he's gotten a little better about that at times this year when he's been able to make some throws on the run, and we've seen him as maneuvering to his right and throwing on the run and maybe making some throws he couldn't a year ago. But I think in general, when there's a big time rush and he's having to flee from the pocket, I think that's if that's happening a lot, Georgia should feel pretty good about the position they're putting themselves in, because outside of a few moments here and there, that's not really the game that C.J. Stroud wants to play. He's not what Justin Fields was at Ohio State a few years ago, where he was really comfortable extending plays. And if he got flushed from the pocket, he would be very happy to keep buying time, waiting for something to happen. He can make a lot of those plays. But I think C.J. Stroud is a far more conventional pocket-style quarterback.
All right, Joey, we'll get you out of here on this one. Georgia coming in to this one, a 6.5-point favorite, but what's your gut? How do you think this one will go? How can Ohio State pull off the upset maybe, or will Georgia pull on out and win this as the number one team?
I still like Georgia in this matchup, and I think a lot of it comes down to me. I just don't know if Ohio State's going to be able to run the ball consistently against Georgia, which nobody has done all year, and considering how anemic Ohio State's rushing offense has been this year, it's tough to see them really getting the momentum they need to on the ground to make things easier on C.J. Stroud and Marvin Harrison Jr. and all those guys. It feels like those guys are going to be stressed too much. So I think they'll put up a good fight. I think Ohio State certainly has a puncher's chance in this game, because they can be really explosive offensively, and you saw in the fourth quarter against Penn State, they can score in bunches. There are a lot of weapons on offense. But I think overall, I think Georgia's up front is going to be too tough for Ohio State to handle.
Joey, appreciate you joining us, and get some sleep. We'll see you in Atlanta this week as the media interviews will be in full force, as we have several days now. Interviewing the Buckeyes and the Bulldogs leading up to Saturday's game. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, and I'm very glad to be in Atlanta and have some boots on the ground.
All right, we thank Joey from joining us from the Columbus Dispatch with some insight on the Buckeyes. Ryan, before we make our a lot more bowl picks, would be very compelling. Listeners don't need to sign off now. Georgia basketball, I think, is now 9-3 heading into a game with Rider on Wednesday night. Kyron Lindsey, a freshman who started much of the season, apparently in the transfer portal. That news came last week while I was on furlough, as Ryan took a furlough earlier in the week. Not great timing for a contributor. He started some games this year, a good number of games. 6'7", 215-pound freshman out of Denton, Texas, who signed with UNLV initially and then became Mike White's first high school recruit to come to Georgia. Kind of weird timing, I think.
That was very weird. And, yeah, he was a four-star guy, I think. Definitely the best in that recruiting class from last year. But yeah, you know, I saw somebody ponder the question on Twitter, like, he can't go anywhere midseason and play, right? I mean, you know, there's been those things in the past where a high school senior could join, you know, in January.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's not a case where you can leave one program and join another for the next semester type of deal, right?
No, and I don't even know academically, like, if he wanted to go to another school and,
right,
you know, be there as a student, but don't know about that, but you know, I mean, Georgia obviously playing some good basketball now. They beat Notre Dame, they beat Chattanooga. Irish, by the way, I think it's now lost maybe four in a row, or three or four in a row.
Yeah.
They lost to Florida State midweek last week. You know, kind of caught me by surprise. I was looking up some stuff, and not really regarding Lindsey, but SEC play begins, I think, Wednesday this week. Georgia not playing their first game until next week, but there's several SEC games already starting up as the schedule already gets cranked up with some of those games. Mike White didn't have much to say about Lindsey the other day, and I'm not sure if he will tomorrow. He's got a late afternoon availability, so we'll see, you know, what happens there. But Bulldogs are playing well now, and Braylon Bridges, you know, becoming a force again. And then Terry Roberts is doing his thing. So that's our back.
What was Bridges in that Notre Dame? 11 for 11 or 9 for 9? Something crazy. And who did he team with? Was it Moncrief?
Yeah, Moncrief was 6 of 6.
Yeah, incredible. Hey, that's your bread and butter, man. Keep going to it.
All right, Ryan, I know you're no longer keeping tabs even. You're too busy. I don't know what you're doing, spending time with your wife, coming up with your own concoction of eggnog or what, but I went 8-8 in the bowl so far. So that's not horrible, I guess. Let's kick around some bowl picks, starting, I think we missed on the Quick Lane Bowl today. I don't even know what happened when that was.
What happened. And I actually watched some of that.
Oh, who won?
New Mexico State beat Bowling Green 24 okay. to 19.
Bowling Green, by the way, correct me if I'm wrong, didn't they sign a Clark Central quarterback?
That they did. Lucian Anderson, inked with the Fighting Eagles. Is that David Letterman's school? Was he at Bowling Green?
No, that's Ball State. Come on.
Ball State.
And Ball State's coming to Georgia next year. So,
all right. So I know what your main story is going to be.
No, that's not true. But I'm going to get Letterman on the podcast. What do you think?
Hey, I'm all for it. Dave, can he bring a top 10 list? What do you think?
I don't think he does that anymore.
He's got
a Netflix show, which I think I saw like some of season one, but I haven't really watched it since then. So maybe I need to.
Yeah, didn't he have? He had a beard too. That was ridiculous.
He still does that thing.
Well, yeah, that's what I meant. Like, yeah.
Hey, what are you doing talking about Letterman? We got some bunch of bowl picks.
We're
not spending much time on these. Camellia Bowl Tuesday in Montgomery, Alabama, Georgia Southern versus Buffalo. Now I saw Frank Sulkowski, who covers Georgia Southern for a TV station down there. He tweeted out a photo from the Embassy Suites in Montgomery, and the Georgia Southern folks had taken it over. I feel bad for anyone that checked in that place just expecting a nice quiet night in Montgomery, and they have hundreds of Georgia Southern fans filling the place up with cheers and stuff like that.
Yeah, I'm going to go Georgia Southern.
I didn't tell you the spread. It's the Eagles. It's the Eagles by 4.5.
Yeah, I know. I'm in a bowl pick'em, so I already know my pick on this, and I'm gonna go with Southern.
Nope, I'm taking Buffalo.
They even leave? I mean, do we know if they got out of Buffalo?
Sure, they did. They had to be in Montgomery all week to prepare for the game. So they're so thrilled not to be up north that they're gonna come out and kick some butt, or at least they're gonna cover the spread.
There you go. All right.
All right. The First Responder Bowl also. This is a lot of games on Tuesday. It's Memphis and Utah State. This is in Dallas. It's Memphis by 7.5. This is 2 6-6 teams. I'll take Utah State getting the points.
You know, I was looking at the schedule of Utah State, and it's very underwhelming. But that is a big number for a bowl game. But I'm going to stick with Memphis. Give me Memphis.
Birmingham Bowl. It's Coastal Carolina and East Carolina.
Mm.
Well, I guess North Carolina and South Carolina were busy. They couldn't make it. Well, I don't know what Western Carolina is doing now. But Eastern Carolina favored by 7. Go ahead, Ryan.
I mean, that's basically their neighbors, right? One's in Wilmington and the other's in somewhere close by. Anyway.
Is that Conway? That's where Conway is.
Conway. They had a bowl game there last week, in fact. But I'm going to take East Carolina. They've had some big wins this year, and I think they got a pretty good team.
Yep, give me the Pirates. Grayson McCall is playing in the game, even though he's in the transfer portal, I believe.
Didn't he announce where he was going?
No, where's he going?
I thought he announced, but maybe I'll do some research here real fast.
All right. The Guaranteed Rate Bowl in Phoenix is also on Tuesday, the last game of the day. It's Oklahoma State and Wisconsin. That's a pretty good game. Badgers by 3.5. Now, I was surprised to read that Luke Fickell is coaching in the game for Wisconsin. That doesn't usually happen where the head coach of a new a new coach comes on. Can you imagine Kirby, like, if he coached in the Tax Slayer Bowl that year?
I thought he wasn't coaching. Are you sure about that? I saw him on signing day the other day, and I thought he said that he was going down to the game.
I thought I read that he's coaching.
It might have changed. I mean, this was a week ago now, but
no, I got to do some Google research.
Anyway, so what's going on?
Anyway, it's Badgers by 3.5. I'm gonna say, give me Oklahoma State getting the points.
I don't know, man. They went on a bummer of a slide at the end of the year. Give me a recharged Wisconsin with Luke Fickell being in attendance no matter where he's at. Give me Wisconsin.
All right, so I'm seeing an ESPN story. Luke Fickell to remain in background for Wisconsin's bowl. He'll be on the sideline.
Okay.
But he said interim coach Jim Leonard will be calling the plays.
Interesting. Again. Interesting.
But, I mean, that's got to be – wait, is Jim Leonard staying on staff, though? I don't know. All right, anyway, let's roll on. We got too many games. Wednesday, it's the Military Bowl in Annapolis. It's UCF and Duke. Duke by 3. Go ahead, Ryan.
Yeah, give me the Dukies. I like the Dukies.
I'm taking the Blue Devils, also playing up north. The Liberty Bowl, it's Arkansas and Kansas in Memphis. SEC is 0-2 so far in the bowl season. It's Arkansas by 3. I must say, give me the Jayhawks. What do you think of that?
Oh, man, rock chalk, huh? No, I mean, all Arkansas has to do is hop across the river there, and they'll be in Memphis. So give me Arkansas in the near location there, you know.
All right, the San Diego Union Credit Union Holiday Bowl. Maybe I threw an extra union. I'm not sure. It's North Carolina and Oregon.
Hey, that's the one in San Diego, right?
It's called the San Diego Union Credit Bowl. So, yes, it is in San Diego.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's always a fun. That's one of my favorite every year.
The bowl game is? Okay.
Yeah.
Is that played in the Padres Stadium?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it used to be played in the old Chargers Stadium, I remember. And it was always a good game. It was like Washington Purdue or something every year. And it was always a thriller. Late night football, too.
All right. It's Ducks by 14.5. I will take the Ducks. It's a West Coast deal. North Carolina's got to go across country. Even though Oregon's kind of focused on recruiting, UNC has been bad lately. So I'm taking Oregon.
That's a big number, though. 14.5?
Yep.
Nah, give me UNC to keep it a little bit closer. Drake May's playing, right?
Yes, he is.
Yeah, give me him. I mean, I know he kind of slumped near the end of the year, too. But I got faith in him to keep that thing fairly close.
All right, Texas Bowl. It's Texas Tech and Ole Miss. The game is in Houston. It's Ole Miss by 3.5.
Yeah, give me Fighting Kiffins.
All right, no idea. I'll take the team getting the points. That's Tech. It's Thursday, Bad Boy Mowers Pinstripe Bowl in Yankee Stadium, Syracuse and Minnesota. In New York, Gophers by 10. Too many points. I'm taking
Syracuse.
Syracuse, then, yeah.
Yeah, I would too. I hope it's snowing there. That's two teams that would enjoy the snow a bit.
Now I'm not sure who's favored. Is that right? Who's favored in that game? Is it Minnesota or Syracuse?
I would think Minnesota, but give me Syracuse.
All right. The Cheez-It Bowl in Orlando. It's Oklahoma and Florida State. The Seminoles by 9.5.
Oh, wow. Then I'll say Oklahoma can keep it closer.
Give me Florida State big.
Ooh.
The Alamo Bowl in San Antonio. It's Texas and Washington. Longhorns by 3.5. I'm going to take Texas in Texas.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. Give me Texas.
All right. Friday, it's the Duke's Mayo Bowl in Charlotte. It's Maryland and NC State, an old ACC matchup. It's the Wolfpack by 1.
Yeah, give me them. Give me the pack to cover the 1.
Yep, I'll take NC State. Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl in El Paso. Yep. Pitt and UCLA, it's the Bruins by 5.5. Give me the Pac-12 team.
Yep, give me UCLA.
Gator Bowl, Greg McGarrity's game in Jacksonville. He gets South Carolina, Notre Dame, the Irish by 2. I have no idea which way this one goes, but I'll take Notre Dame. Gamecocks already had their big wins this year.
Okay, no, give me the Fighting Beamers rolling. They're picking up steam. Give me the Gamecocks.
All right, the Barstool Arizona Bowl in Tucson. What if Georgia had to play in a game called the Barstool Bowl? Ohio versus Wyoming. Ohio by 1. The game is out west. I am taking Wyoming.
Oh, geez, I don't know. Give me Ohio then.
Orange Bowl, Tennessee and Clemson. Plenty of orange. Tigers by 5.5. Ron, what are you doing?
I mean, give me Clemson. Just, you know, with Tennessee missing their quarterback, though Milton didn't do bad when he played the other day, but give me Clemson.
Give me the Vols getting the points. Saturday, Sugar Bowl, Alabama, Kansas State, tied by 6.5. I'm taking Alabama, giving the points. They seem locked in for this one.
Oh, yeah, Alabama big.
Music City Bowl in Nashville. It's Iowa and Kentucky. Hawkeyes by 2.5.
Iowa.
Give me Iowa. Levis has opted out of this game. Fiesta Bowl, TCU and Michigan. This is the national semifinal. Wolverines by 7.5. I will take Michigan, giving the points.
Yeah, I think so too. I think they win easily.
Very impressed with Michigan, the way they dismantled Ohio State in that second half.
Yeah.
Peach Bowl, Georgia, Ohio State, Bulldogs by 6.5. Ryan, what are you doing?
All right. So, you know, as we heard from our friend a little while ago, I think Georgia has, you know, just stacked defense, and up front is where they always shine. And he said, without Ohio State not having much of a running game, I mean, that's the number one thing Georgia focuses on all the time is stopping the run. So I think this is going to be a game where, you know, Georgia just flexes its muscle, kind of like last year's Orange Bowl. And I think they come out and pretty much have their way and put up a lot of points and win pretty big. So I say they definitely cover the 6.5. Bulldogs on in the national championship game.
Yep, I'm taking Georgia. I had to do a prediction for the Columbus paper. I think I went 38-24 Georgia. And some of the reasons I wrote in the little blurb that will go with it. Ohio State has a motivation factor on its side after that Michigan game, you know, kind of became a disaster in the second half. But Georgia defense has surely heard plenty about these 502 passing yards LSU put up. Mm-hmm. You know, since then, I'm expecting, you know, CJ Stroud and Marvin Harrison Jr., that's quite a combination. They're going to make their plays. I think the Buckeyes are not going to be able to get anything going with the run game, as Joey mentioned. I mean, the way Georgia is stopping the run, that's a very tough, stout front. And I think Stetson Bennett has played his best in the biggest games, you know, for Georgia the last, what, 3-4 times out. This certainly is one of them. Ohio State's defense gives up big plays, or at least they certainly did against Michigan. That's bad news with Todd Monken getting 4 weeks to prepare. Georgia.
Absolutely. I like your points there.
Ryan?
Yes, sir.
Make those reservations for LA. I don't know if we're all both going or not, but now I don't want to jinx that, though. You know, fans will be pissed at me if I say make a reservation. So everybody enjoy the game. Bring a bottle of champagne to pop before midnight, I guess, and then maybe celebrate a victory for Georgia. And hopefully it'll be a fun week in Atlanta. And
here's a question. Will we be able to pop the champagne before the game is over?
Didn't we get you weren't at the Orange Bowl, were you?
Nope, I wasn't.
I think they had some champagne in there afterwards.
But will the game be over before midnight, I guess?
I think it's supposed to end, I mean, who knows, but like, yeah. I think ideally they think it'll end like 11:45-ish or something. So I'll be like waiting for post game interviews at midnight, probably. So
fun.
Pour one out for me because I'm not going to be doing that.
I'll drink your half.
All right, you guys, we'll be back next week with another podcast talking about whatever happens in this game and what's next for Georgia. So have a great rest of 2022 and happy early new year for you.
Yep. See y'all next week.